The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome, listeners, to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic physician and host for today. Dr. Kamai has the week off, and we have a very interesting, exciting guest, a man who they say is an angel disguised as a medical doctor. That was by Dr. Wayne Dyer, a quote from Dr. Dyer. And our guest is Dr. William Hablitzel. And he's going to be talking about how his patients are his teachers and the difference between curing disease and the healing of people. And we're really excited to have him on to talk about, you know, things that happen to us every day that we can learn to make our lives better. And he's the author of Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me and his new book, It Was Only a Moment Ago. And he's going to tell us some interesting stories about the world of modern medicine and the difference between curing people and healing people. And tell us interesting lessons that hopefully you'll be able to glean lots of information. So, Doctor, are you there?
I am indeed.
Thanks for being on the program here.
It is it's an honor.
So tell us a little bit about your journey as a healer, not only as a physician, but actually as a healer, and that'll get us started, I think, on a wonderful little journey here.
Looking back, it certainly started long before medical school, where we learn how to cure disease and treat symptoms. I started my work really in the healing or the medical field as a paramedic for my hometown fire department. And I took a quarter off school from college and to become a paramedic, and I liked it and was offered a job working for the city. And I was there for about 5 years before it was I realized that it was time to move on, that my interests were I could build upon them, and that eventually led to medical school and to work in practice of general internal medicine and medical education, and most recently working out in the country.
So it sounds to me like the your approach to encompasses the whole mind body spirit connection. Can you explain what that kind of is to the lay person out there? Because they may have heard, the doctor, listens to you, or they may have seen Patch Adams or one of these great pioneers of this whole burgeoning field. But in your opinion, what is this integration that we're looking for in, as far as healing goes?
Well, it's more than we often look for. Certainly, I think when we start out in medicine, and often when we go see a doctor, we're often there to have a problem addressed. And the day in the office is consumed with a litany of problems. Sometimes it's managing chronic disease like blood pressure, maybe diabetes, but more often than not, it's a problem. My back hurts. I have a headache. I feel tired. I can't sleep. And our training kicks in from medical school and residency, and we inquire as to the symptom, and we reach for a prescription pad, and we order something that will help relieve that symptom, and more often than not, it gets better, and people leave and are happy. But sometimes we need more. Sometimes the body has a miraculous way of helping us, of taking us to people and places and situations that can help us. And I'm speaking more about curing an illness or treating a symptom. I'm talking about healing. Mm. We teach our medical students that 60% of people that seek a primary care physician, 60% of their problems have some psychosocial basis to them. And it's a statistic that always sticks with me, because at the end of the day, I look at my patient list and I wonder, did I detect 6 of 10 people today that might have had something more than just the problem they told me about? For example, what's behind the back pain? Is it stress at work? What's behind the being tired? Is it some loss that's been encountered in life that we may not be aware of? So by looking at the entire individual, listening to their story, I think we start to discover the keys that can actually help us heal. And I think that's the integration that you're speaking of.
Yeah, yeah. You know, unfortunately, a lot of that takes quite a bit of time to get to know the patient. And I know in biomedicine, sometimes the docs don't, with either trying to make a living or or whatever the reason is, they're not really spending enough time to get into that very interesting inward journey with our patients, seeing them as humans instead of just kind of like, okay, well, we got to take care of this problem, and then who's next on the list? So how do you as a modern day practitioner grapple with those types of issues?
It's an incredible challenge, and I think it's going to be a challenge for our country as we move forward with health reform and bringing more uninsured into the system, which certainly we need. But we run the risk of becoming even more of a cookie cutter kind of a profession, where we work on protocol and where we have 8-minute appointments.
Yeah.
But I think even in that brief period of time that we may have allotted, we can learn to do things differently. We may not have to jump into the routine and the tradition and that we were taught in school. Maybe we can do things differently and just focus on, what we perceive the problem to be. Or more importantly, if we ask the question, usually people will tell us what's wrong with them. All we have to do is listen. And more often than not, not only will they tell us what's wrong with them, they'll tell us what they need to get better. And how easy can that be? So in that regard, medicine is actually a fairly simple profession.
So give us an example of that, because, like, say, have you ever had a patient with high blood pressure who comes in and then when you talk to them says, oh, yeah, my kids are driving me crazy, or, I have a lot of pressures with work or whatever, and it's not kind of what they eat, it's what's eating at them that's creating the hypertension.
I can give you an example of a gentleman that came into my office not long ago. He was a gentleman that was working, and he just popped into the office. I did not know him, and my medical assistant sort of felt sorry for him. He needed some help. His knee was extremely painful. It was just before lunchtime, and she figured, well, this would be a simple problem. We can get him in and out quickly. Let's take care of him. So we brought him in, and he told me that his knee just really started hurting the day before, and it was sort of a debilitating pain. He was having difficulties working that day. And he didn't really describe any trauma, any unusual activity. But he did tell me, I had pain like this about this time last year. And I examined his knee, and I couldn't find anything wrong with his knee. And I told him, well, I thought it was an overuse injury, maybe a strain. And more, he would probably get better on his own, but we used some anti-inflammatories, recommended some heat and some stretching exercises. And as he got up to leave, I was jotting a note in his chart, And I casually mentioned, so are you heading back to work now? And he said, no, I'm heading out to the cemetery. And I said, oh, your parents? And he said, no, my son. He died 2 years ago. Matter of fact, 2 years today. So I looked at him, and I realized that there was more to this knee pain than I had appreciated. And I had him sit down, and he told me a story. That 2 years earlier, his son, three, 4 years old, was sleeping in his house trailer. And he was at work, and the house trailer caught on fire. His girlfriend was there in the house trailer, and she got out. But his son was killed. And at the funeral, a social worker from the county appeared and took his other son, who was in school at the time of the fire, took him to live with foster parents because he was obviously a bad parent and couldn't be trusted with another child. And he didn't have visitation. He really didn't know where the child was, but he had heard just recently that the foster home that he was placed, his son was being abused. So in knee pain, this man needed to heal. And there was certainly not lunch that day. It's one of the stories that I try to always remember day by day, because we never know what we're going to encounter and how we may have an opportunity to serve.
I know sometimes we have people with, you know, that are pretty far gone with cancer, and they're probably, you know, very close to death or whatnot. And I know you've actually said in some of your books that there's even a chance of healing a dying person. And, you know, to many people, they say, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. So how do you make sense out of that statement?
There are indeed times where we encounter people with a limited lifespan, cancer, heart disease. And certainly, we may not be able to cure that problem, but there can be healing. I had a gentleman in my office that he came with his wife, and it took me a couple visits to really get to know them because they didn't volunteer much. They were changing doctors, and they were so very angry. And about the third visit, we finally were able to speak about their anger. He had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and it was metastatic, and it spread throughout his body, and it was aggressive tumor, and he was told that he didn't have long to live. He had maybe 6 months, the experts predicted. And his wife, and he was so angry because he had done very well in the business world. He had his own company. He saved a lot of money. He was going to retire at age 57, which was only a few years away, and they were going to spend half their year traveling all around the world, doing as he had dreamed, and half the time he would be at home with grandchildren. And they were angry because their dreams had been taken away from them. And he lived so much in the future that the future was gone, and he didn't have it today. And I talked to them about, you know, what had really changed, that there's no guarantee of tomorrow. Life can change in the blink of an eye. We, you know, you can be told that you have 6 months to live, but it doesn't protect you from stepping outside of my office and getting hit by a car and being killed today. So I suggested, you were planning to retire, why not do it now? I thought I must have upset them because I didn't see them for quite some time. They canceled their follow-up appointments, and I started receiving postcards from all over the world. And always inscribed in the back of the postcard was just a couple words, living the dream. And when eventually I saw them back and was in a hospital room, and it was the day that he passed, his wife came up to me, and she put her arm around me. She said, "Don't be sad." He said, we've lived our dream. That in the past 6 months, we found a level of love and intimacy between the two of us that we never, ever would have experienced had he not been told he was going to die. Had we not taken that opportunity to live, that we were always thinking about the past or living tomorrow. But we had the opportunity to make every day special. And she said, it's changed our lives. So we certainly did not cure this man, but there's no doubt in my mind that he was healed, his wife was healed, and I indeed found healing.
That's a wonderful story, Doctor. if you're just joining us, we're discussing sort of this concept that patients are our best teachers and the difference between curing of disease and the healing of people with Dr. William E. Habutzel, and he's the author of Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me and the new book It Was Only a Moment Ago. So let's talk a little bit about this other concept in your book about how thinking is a huge indicator of your health and illness, and when it comes to your health, how can your thoughts kill you?
Our thoughts are pretty powerful, and our thoughts are a reflection of really of what's of the energy of our body. I often encounter people with problems that we often invite into our lives. I see a lot of people that worry, often the worried well, that they worry endlessly about problems, and strange, often they bring those problems and they create them, they bring them into their lives. And what we think about can certainly influence our health. What we think about can actually happen. People often ask me, so how can what I think about have anything to do with my body? Well, when we peel or slice open a lemon, hold it in our hands and squeeze it, you watch the juice drip down your hand, usually our mouths will water, our face will pucker. But how can that happen? We're just merely thinking about a lemon, but yet there's a change that occurs in our body. We produce saliva. And this can happen on any level, that every cell in our body is wired into our nervous system. And it transmits energy, electrical energy in this case, and of which our thoughts are part of our nervous system. So the stressed business executive who never has time for things that she may enjoy starts having abdominal pain, develops an ulcer. Well, thoughts, the stress and the things we think about can certainly change our blood pressure, cause the cells within our lining of our stomach to produce more hydrochloric acid, can produce an ulcer. And much of it is influenced by our thoughts. I often see people in my office, every day actually, that tell me they can't sleep. Just can't sleep. And they want a pill to help them sleep. medical school taught me to ask about things like temperatures of the room and what medicines they're on. But my patients, my real teachers, have taught me to ask other questions, but more importantly, to listen for the answers. And now I ask, what do you do before you go to bed? And more often than not, I'm told I watch the late news.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, so you sit there and you watch images of war, incredible scenes of violence inflicted on one another in the name of religion. We see talking heads discussing politics and how the other side is evil. We hear about an economy that's heading for certain depression. And if all of that doesn't get us, bird flu is going to wipe us out next week. And then you go to bed. I wonder why you can't sleep. Well, what we watch, that's an energy. We brought that into our lives. We thought about that. It changes our body. But the most amazing thing is that once we realize that, there's a solution that comes with that realization, is that we have control over our thoughts or control of what we invite into our lives. And in this case, there's a modern device. I think it's probably government mandated on televisions now. It's called an off switch. We have the power to turn it off. Or if we must, if we're so ingrained and we have to watch that, maybe spend a few extra minutes then before you go to bed in silence, maybe alone with your thoughts, whether you call it meditation, contemplation, or prayer, reading something inspirational, listening to soft music, but being surrounded in energy and thoughts of our choosing.
So that would be a sort of a good sleep hygiene type of ritual that you would recommend for people with problems with sleeping, perhaps, especially if it was their thoughts that were keeping them awake.
I think it's an excellent idea.
You know, a lot of times people have surges of cortisol in the middle of the night, too, that kind of keep them awake, and that has a lot to do with the effect of all this stress on the physiology of the adrenals and other things like that. So, of course, there's a whole other level of things that we could also recommend, too. But certainly more peace before you go to bed is, I think, very important. As is, like you mentioned, energy in a lot of your work. But you know, there's bad energy too. Like for instance, if one patient I had, the only thing that seemed to be the problem with their sleep is they had to move their clock, which was plugged into the wall, away from their head. So when they moved it away from their, I guess it was maybe about a foot or so from their head, and not only was the light maybe suppressing their melatonin or whatnot, but who knows if the electromagnetic radiation given off by that clock was somehow affecting their melatonin or their sleep cycle, because we are such beings of energy. So tell us a little bit about what energy has to do with illness from your perspective.
Well, energy can make us ill. There's no doubt about it. Much like the example that you gave, sometimes it can be fairly innocuous energy. But Albert Einstein taught us a lot about energy, and I think we're just beginning to understand some of the things that he taught us and some of his colleagues, that everything is energy. That even when we look at things that appear solid, like a chair, that's really sort of energy, that there's particles in that chair that are vibrating. It's just vibrating at a much slower rate than maybe a liquid or something that we can't see or something that we hear. And once we sort of get our head around that concept, it's not that difficult to consider how energy can sort of sneak into our body and sneak into our lives and really change us. There's there's energy that can make it sick, maybe, you know, slower, lower vibrating energy. An example might be of the of some of the things that we invite into our lives that, that make us ill. One example may be the music we listen to or the movies we watch. The medical literature and also the lay press is full of studies that show a relationship between violent video games and violent movies and aggressive behavior in children and young adults. By, you know, watching violence, it changes their body. Just by watching it, it changes how they are, how they behave. So, we also, all of us know someone that when they walk into the room, maybe at work, we just don't feel as good as we did before they walked in the door. We all say, oh, not this person again. I gotta get out of here. Well, people have an energy about them. We sort of radiate an energy, and there are some people that are just downers. Often the people that complain, the moan and the groan. And those people in our lives can influence us, can change how we feel. So maybe Mom was always right, that it is important who we associate with. If all of these things can make us ill, there's also the secret there, the things that can make us better. Just sort of avoiding those things that make us feel bad. Even if we can't identify if it's the energy, if we know something's not making us feel good, then get away from it. Change the channel on the television. Listen to a different radio station. Walk away from the person that's complaining. Or if you can't get away from the negativity, then maybe not participate in it.
How about the radio station in your brain, sort of? Because, you know, sometimes we need to practice, you know, thought stopping, or one of the powerful mind-body techniques that I'm sure you work with your patients with as well. As I do this many times, or like Dr. Richard Carlson said, people having a thought attack, or I don't think people are even sometimes aware, including myself sometimes, you know, of you know, sort of you have this downward spiral of thinking, and I think sometimes we need to find a moment to interrupt the pattern and get out of this quagmire of thought sometimes. It's really fascinating. What techniques can you share with the listeners to sort of practice more mindfulness and looking at their own thoughts and seeing if that's agitating them or causing them bad health or something like that?
I think our thoughts are incredibly powerful, and I think that self-talk that goes on in our mind all the time, all that chatter, certainly influences us, and it certainly influences me. And I often catch myself thinking of things that are, you know, probably not helping me. And so this is something that you almost have to always work with. It's amazing how things, when things start going wrong, they always seem, everything seems to go wrong, one thing after another. And when that happens, I try to stop myself and say, you know, what's been going on in your thoughts? And more often than not, just like you mentioned, it's the kind of thoughts, the negativity, the doubt, the blame, that's been going on, and you need to find a way to change those thoughts. And one thing that I've found to be helpful is just being in a quiet place, trying to find silence. Many would call that meditation. And at first that can be difficult, because when you're in a quiet room, sometimes your thoughts can just go make you nuts. But if you practice just being quiet, eventually you get better and better and better at it. And so many of us and so many of my patients, when I ask them about if they're comfortable being quiet. So many will say no, that most people have a television on in the background, a radio on. They like that noise because we have troubles being alone with our thoughts. Well, there's ways we can learn how to meditate, even learning just how to be comfortable being quiet. I find exercise is very helpful. Walking out in nature, being active. I find my thoughts usually will start turning inward, and that chatter and that negativity starts to dissolve for me. One particular combination of these things is I often suggest people investigate learning how to do yoga. That's very beneficial, not only for the body, but for the mind.
Yeah, or Tai Chi or something. Well, I hear, I guess we're at the midway point, and I hear some music, so that means it's time to take a break, get a nice cup of tea, practice a couple of you can meditate quickly. All it takes is a few minutes, a few deep breaths. So stay with us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we'll be back with our guest, Dr. William Hablitzel, and we'll continue this wonderful discussion. Stay tuned.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host of Animal Magnet Pet Radio. You can listen live to me every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern for the best pet radio in America, Canada, and beyond. Hard-hitting pet issues, animal news, training tips, tricks, games, and quirky pet trivia, plus the A-list pet guests each week. Or listen anytime to past shows at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Listen to this show so you can be good to your animals.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
This is Adam Coulter with Brooklyn Jazz Underground Radio. We'll be here every Tuesday from 5 to 6 with great music, interviews, and live performances. Right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network. Again, that's Tuesdays from 5 to 6, or you can listen anytime at the archives at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. This is Bert Cohen. My past shows include The New Media Power of Comcast, Socialism for Wall Street Only, and How to Empower Your Own Community Over Corporate Interests. For archives, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to The Bert Cohen Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.com. The Bert Cohen Show. There's really nothing like it.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
And we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we have as our guest Dr. William E. Hablitzel. And Dr. Hablitzel is a medical doctor who has written many books and is discussing different ways to look at health and healing that maybe and giving us some great tools to live a calmer, more peaceful life and integrating our mind and body and what's happening in this vast universe that is inside of us. And so thanks for joining us again, Doc. And tell us a little bit about issues that you see amongst, like what's the leading, you think, issue that we're dealing with now as far as healthcare goes? Do you think it's cancer or heart disease? What are most people coming in to your office to see, to see you for?
Well, certainly, if you look at mortality statistics, what kills us in our society is heart disease. That's what eventually will claim most of us. But what I see most in the office on a day-to-day basis is more complaints of symptoms, often back pain, maybe headache, and fatigue. Those three are probably what I see most often. And then I see somewhere in between, you know, the high blood pressure and the chronic illness. So what kills us may be the heart, but I think what makes us feel bad is these aches and pains and the fatigue, the feeling tired. And I think that's a symptom of daily life and what we bring into our life.
Do you think people are tired because they're not sleeping enough? I mean, fatigue is like a doctor's nightmare when someone comes in and says they're tired. I mean, it could be everything from anemia to, you know, in a holistic model, we look at exposure to heavy metals and things, viruses and things blocking the Krebs cycle and just a whole myriad of issues. But from the mind-body perspective, what do you think is going on with lots of the patients who are chronically fatigued?
Well, I must admit, when someone comes to my office and says that they feel tired, I usually cringe.
Yeah.
Because I almost never am able to give them an answer that they want to hear.
Right.
Often it'll be they want blood work done. So, you know, we check a thyroid studies.
Right.
We check blood sugars. We check to see if they're anemic. And more often than not, all those studies come back normal. And then when you sit down and you tell people, well, I have good news, all of your lab work is normal, they're often disappointed.
Yeah.
And they say, well, gee, you know, then why do I feel bad?
Mm-hmm.
And that by far happens the vast majority of the time. So then you have to start looking deeper. You know, could it be things like the heavy metals? Could it be the exotic things? Could it be the virus? Often symptoms of fatigue and feeling tired can often be a symptom of depression.
Right, exactly.
It can be one of the most common symptoms of depression. And that can be a tough topic to talk about, because often if I broach the topic, it's almost as if they're waiting for it. And people often feel indignant. See, you know, I'm not depressed. I'm not imagining this. This is real. And we've become so ingrained in our society that that depression or stress is a weakness of character.
Yeah.
And then that's what launches the talking, getting to know people, and that's really the journey, where the journey starts.
Yeah, you have to kind of get a good idea what's happening in their lives, like we talked about, and I think that, you know, takes time, and we've spoken about that a little bit. Do you think that doctors in training are so busy with learning the medicine, actually, that they're not really being properly trained in this kind of new frontiers in integrated medicine? I mean, maybe they'll take a course here and there, or if they go to Andrew Weil's school, they'll take a, you know, one of his residencies or whatnot. But it doesn't seem like there's a whole, emphasis on these things. Particularly, maybe certain areas are different than the other. But what's your take on that?
I think you're absolutely right. I have spent the majority of my career spending time in medical education with medical students and residents, and as I look back at my training, we spend far too little time talking about issues of healing because we're so busy mastering the science and the science of medicine that we sort of forget about the art of medicine and more importantly of healing. If there is one thing that I could teach medical students and residents, and sometimes I look at my encounter with them, it's really as brief, and maybe I only have time to do one thing. And certainly I can't teach anyone medicine. Maybe I can help them learn a little bit about medicine, though. But if I could help them learn one thing, it's the power of listening. Just that one thing. If someone will, through maybe something that I help them discover, if before they walk out of any examination room that they're in, they take one extra minute at the end of their visit and ask sort of the unscripted question, is there anything else that you'd like me to know? And they'll discover that in those brief moments that they'll often hear stories that may touch their life, but in that moment of listening, they make a contact with a human being. And it's through that listening, even if we don't write a medicine, even if we don't order a test or order a procedure, it's in that listening that we're sort of engaged with another human being. And it's sort of that partnership is where we really start to find healing. And it's something you can't read about. You have to experience. And I don't know how we teach enough of that. But we may be getting better. I think more and more medical schools now are having courses in humanism and medicine, talking about more of interviewing skills. And so, maybe we're starting to wake up. We have a long ways to go, but I'm sort of encouraged that more and more schools are sort of at least becoming conscious that there may be something more that we haven't been teaching.
Do you think that there are things that we could teach our patients as doctors that can make their lives better? Hopefully we're living, breathing examples of holism ourselves. I mean, we're all human and make mistakes and are going through our own journeys. But, I think myself being a naturopathic doctor, that whole training, and we're always on a healing path ourselves. So are there any things we could do today to help our patients live better?
I think there's things that a few concepts that I try to stress, that things that people can do start today, to actually start getting better today. And it's an ongoing process, just as you alluded to, that journey never ends. Mm. And I find that I have to continually remind myself of these very concepts and practice them. The first one we've already touched upon, and that's the importance of finding some silence and some quiet time in our life. And I like to start my day, no matter how busy I think I am, I like to start at least a few minutes sitting in a quiet place, if that's in my office or if that's before I leave the house. And in that silence, in that quiet, I've discovered that that voice that's inside of me, I can hear most clear in that setting. Another thought that I try to share is the seeking out and experiencing something of beauty every day. Once we start to look for it, we'll discover we're always going to find it. And then we find it more and more and more throughout the day. So I encourage people to maybe hang something, a piece of art, at their workspace, maybe something that their children have drawn, a figurine, something of beauty, and occasionally throughout the day, notice it and, you know, appreciate the beauty. Maybe noticing the sunset or the sunrise or that picture on the wall of the office that you walk by every day but have never really noticed. That in itself has some healing energy and starts changing the way we think throughout the day. Another one is finding something at least once every day, something that you're grateful for. And, you know, it may seem like it's hard to do that every day, but, boy, once you start to recognize something you're grateful for, you start to encounter it everywhere, and you start to expect it's going to show up. Maybe you're grateful for the person that fixed you breakfast. Another one we've also touched upon is I encourage people to, avoid negativity throughout the day. That if something just doesn't really make you feel good, avoid it. Avoid the person at work that maybe complains. But along the same token is you spend time with people that make you feel good. And we all know people that when they walk in the room, we feel better by their presence, you know, a friend. So spend some time or maybe a telephone call to someone that makes you feel good. And we, you know, those friendships, those relationships, when everything boils down in medicine and healing and everything we've been talking about, when we get down to the bottom of everything, it's our relationships with people that I think heals us and gets us better. Even the people that live alone and maybe are somewhat isolated, it's still their relationship with people in their lives that's important. Perhaps the most powerful thing that I can share with people and to remind them is the power of giving. If you really want to feel good, you really want to change the way your day's going, give something of yourself to someone else. It doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot of money. It doesn't take a lot of time. It can be something as simple as holding the door open for someone, carrying the elderly lady's trash can next door out to the curb. You want to see a face light up? Give an unexpectedly generous tip at a restaurant. Or pay for the person's coffee at Starbucks that's standing next to you in line. And just stand back and watch their face and watch how much they light up.
Wow.
And then, more importantly, look in the mirror and look how you feel, and you're smiling too because it's a two-way street. Mm. There is a free clinic that that I've been blessed with attending here where I live. And no matter how much time we give and how much we give of ourselves, there's never a day that I don't walk out of there feeling that I've received much more than I've given.
So you give of yourself, give something. It doesn't have to be lots of money or time, just something like that to touch other people, and it comes back to us manyfold.
And I guarantee you, it will. It makes you feel good. You know, even that kind of giving and that kind of sharing actually sells newspapers. This last whenever you look at a natural disaster, there's always pictures in the newspaper of people that may flock to a disaster site and are giving to others. And we look at those pictures, it makes us feel good. So even looking at the picture of someone giving makes us feel good. There's a message in that, and it takes most of us far too long to figure it out.
And I know you worked as a fireman, so you're constantly giving of yourself and time to help people, in whether in emergency situations or things like that. I'm sure you've come across lots of situations, not only as a physician, but as a fireman. They're one of the most revered members of our society, you know.
Well, that's how I got started.
It was a
small town, and we didn't have a lot of fires, but we certainly had ambulance calls, and encountered people at their most vulnerable stage in life. We're really challenged, and something in those experiences certainly touched me and led me to where I'm at now. It's all part of our journey.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit, before we end in a few minutes, tell us a little bit about your books. Now, the first book was Dying Was the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me. Tell us a little bit about that. And then, of course, your newer one, It Was Only a Moment Ago.
Both books are really series of stories of encounters with my most important teachers, and those are the patients that have come into my life, that they're the ones that really have taught me about healing. And so it's an effort to share their wisdom with others. And the title of the first book came about with a gentleman that I met early in my career, is probably the most successful man I had ever met. He was at the top of his career, top of his game, professionally, socially, politically. And I thought he was probably the most happiest man I ever met, because at that time in my life, I equated happiness with success. Mm-hmm. But I never saw the man smile. He had a professional smile, but not one that he really meant or felt. And one day this man, after experiencing for 4 months sensations in his chest that he had ignored for months, he strangely found himself standing in a long line in an emergency room waiting to be registered as a patient. And as he stood in front of the registration clerk, he reached for his chest and said, I think there may be something wrong with my heart. And in that instant, he fell across her desk and died.
Wow.
He was carried back into a trauma room, and sure enough, he was breathless, he was pulseless, he was dead. And 10 minutes later, he had been resuscitated. 3 days later, he left the hospital with an implantable defibrillator in his chest. And 1 week later, he stood in my office. And as I walked into the examination room, for the first time, I saw a smiling man, and I knew beyond any doubt that he was a happy man. And he looked at me, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Dying was the best thing that ever happened to me." There's an ancient Buddhist proverb that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Right.
Well, there he stood. And so the book is an effort to share some of the incredible wisdom that we can find in lessons of the human experience through some of our darkest challenges, that you don't have to die, you don't have to become ill, you don't have to have a meteor fall on you in order to learn the lessons that can be found in those experiences. We can learn them from those that have been there.
So, we all have different wake-up calls, I guess you're saying. Hopefully.
Indeed.
Hopefully listening to this program is a wake-up call for someone that maybe is going through a dark part of their existence or life and can just take some of our advice that we're giving out today and maybe use it. Certainly, you gave quite a number of great tips for people to begin the process of healing and changing what things that can make a big difference in their quality of life. I was gardening yesterday, and
trying to, and I was kind of tired, and I was thinking about, oh my God, like, you know, it was like the first day on the Northeast that we could really get outside and do some serious yard work, and I'm looking at the overwhelming tasks, and I kept saying, well, you know, let's notice the plant, let's be more zen about this, and it kind of helped my mental state instead of being overwhelmed. I think people are really entangled and overwhelmed with things, but they have to realize that, you know, by the yard it's hard, but inch by inch it's a cinch. It's a nice proverb to live by, that you need to notice these small things in life, or else life just becomes just stale repetition of repetitions, I guess.
And I think that's a wonderful statement. And what you're really advocating is finding a way to sort of bring us where we're appreciating that present moment, because really right now is the only place we're ever going to be able to find happiness, find healing. And if we're so worried about the things we have to do, we're really thinking about something in the future. And if we sort of break it down in little pieces and little nuggets, there's healing there.
Yeah. And tell us a little about your second book before we have to sign off in about 2 minutes, Dr.
It Was Only a Moment Ago.
Yeah.
Is much like the first book, is a series of stories that sort of teaches us that there's teachers all around us, and the wonderful lessons are ours for the taking. All we have to do is sort of pay attention. And the title comes from our awareness that where we think we've been around a long time, you know, in the cosmic picture, we're here for just a blink of the eye, for a moment. So everything that we sort of worry about and dwell upon was really only a moment ago. And there is a website, it was onlyamomentago.com, where chapters of the book can be obtained, and wonderful lessons can be shared, and no one has to buy anything. And it's an effort to share.
Great. Well, thanks very much. I really enjoyed this touching radio program, and wish you luck in your journey, and encourage people to get your books and read about these things. I like books like that that can kind of give us a nice little uplifting part and help us on our healing journey. Dr. Hablitzel, it's been a pleasure. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, have a great day. And that's it for this edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Kamai will be back next week, The Natural Nurse. And stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.